In your face
with Donnie and Grace.
Whoa.
Hello. Hi, sweetheart.
Hello, my Donnie.
Nice to see you.
Yes, we just got together because I'm going to send pictures of Donnie looking remorseful and because he's always late.
Oh, well, I was
it's
late
always
today
something.
For sure. Yeah, I was like the wrong train. I had to walk 4 blocks.
You
I'm
got
like,
here
what
before before our guest called.
That's true.
That's
thank
thing.
God. Thank God.
And you were sick, so we hadn't done one then.
Yeah, I got the flu. It was the all-out. You know, kick your butt.
Up, down, all around.
Oh, up, down, yeah, pretty much.
Heads or tails.
Yeah, lost 10 pounds, which is great, you know, but at the same time, I'm like,
it's like, yuck.
Yeah, but I like to work. Anyway, we have an amazing guest today.
Yes, we do.
Oh,
I read
my
her
gosh.
Book. Love, love, love it. Hey, we have groovy strobe lights going on for you, Susan.
I know. It's like,
because she's from the groovy.
No, it's true, Susan. We have, she's got these lights that are glittering all over the ceiling. If we were on LSD right now, it'd be so cool.
This is in honor of you.
You know.
I wish you were here.
Yeah. This is great. Ladies and gentlemen, Susan Shumsky.
Yay.
Yes.
Hi, Susan.
Award-winning author.
Hi.
Yes.
14 books, but today specifically we are going to talk about Susan's book, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru and so many other famous people.
Hello.
Wowza kazowza.
Yeah, and you've got stories about the Beatles.
Yeah, she does.
That's
she's got
amazing.
A lot of stuff.
I do.
Scoops.
I have a little scoop later after you're
Ooh,
done.
Another
I worked with George Martin and that was fun. But who produced all the Beatles
yes,
records.
But, I'm very familiar with George Martin.
But did you ever get to meet George Martin, Susan?
I did not.
Oh, okay. No, but you knew the Maharishi. That's amazing. Oh, wow.
Okay. So
amazing.
Let's just begin your path. Okay. You left your parents' house in Colorado, and you headed to free love and grooviness in Asbury, correct?
Yes, I went to Counterculture Central.
Shrumpskeets are chum. Shrumpskeets.
That's a hard one to say, I was going to say.
Yeah, San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked a hippie school, a beatnik kind of school, which is California College of Arts and Crafts in Oakland.
Rock on.
And and I immediately completely embraced the whole hippie lifestyle. I became the ultimate hippie. I dressed the part. I acted the part. You know, turn on, tune in, drop out.
Awesome.
I sewed my own hippie crazy clothes and
did you wear bell bottoms?
Outrageous, absolutely.
I have bell bottoms.
Outrageous cost. You know, the outrageous everything.
Awesome.
Feathers in your hair and stuff.
Absolutely. And
fabulous.
Free love. You know, I was definitely a flower child.
Wow.
And those of us who were flower children, you might not know this, but the flower children were really into seeking spiritual experiences.
Hence LSD, right?
With LSD. And our gurus at the time were Timothy Leary,
mm-hmm. yep,
and Richard Alpert, who wrote the book The Psychedelic Experience.
Mm.
And that was about the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Wow.
So I was reading the Buddhist scriptures, including Tibetan Book of the Dead and others. And I was reading Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. I was reading The Way of Zen by Alan Watts and other books by Alan Watts. And in Alan Watts' books, it said that you have to find a meditation guide. Well, in 1966 in Berkeley, California, you didn't exactly go to the yellow pages
right.
and look up
the
meditation guide.
Mm-hmm.
Groovy guru, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't find that in the yellow pages. So I asked the roommate, well, how do I find this meditation guide that Alan Watts keeps talking about? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own? I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed. Clearly, I was completely clueless. I didn't even know that you're supposed to sit up when you meditate. I lay on my bed and I sort of prayed for or asked for a quote unquote meditation. Hmm. Immediately, I was propelled into an ecstatic state. I could feel a cord or rush of energy rushing from the tips of my toes all the way to the top of my head.
Wow. Were you on drugs, Susan?
No, I don't mean to be rude. Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow, absolutely not.
Wow.
I was not.
Your first time.
That's a good question, yes. And I felt like I was plugged into this cosmic electric socket, but in the most ecstatic way. And this rush of energy was rushing through my body. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I guess this is meditation. Little did I know that not only had I had my first meditation, but also Kundalini awakening all at the same time.
What is a Kundalini awakening?
Wow.
So the Kundalini is a very spiritual energy that flows through the subtle body, and you experience it when you're awakening to higher consciousness.
Mm.
And it often feels like a rush of energy rushing up your spine or something like that.
Sounds like Houdini instead of Houdini.
I'm reading your book.
Rhymes with Houdini. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's close.
Houdini, babe, let's do it.
Yeah, but I couldn't, you know, I'm reading your book and there's all these like terms and men's names, the Rahi Raja and Rahiba or whatever. And I was just perplexed, but I think the Maharishi is mad at me because I have had the weirdest couple of days. But and I'll tell you why he's mad at me.
He felt your vibe.
Felt my vibe, but I won't say it until we start. I want Susan to get us how you got it. Oh, about the guy who came to your apartment who wore khakis and a white shirt. What was that about? How could he be a guru and he wore like, you know, loafers?
Hey, you know what? That sounds like guru-ish.
But didn't he say he was a guru to you?
Well, he's the one that got me started on the spiritual path, yes.
I see.
And he appeared in front of my apartment. He didn't look like anybody else in the area because I was living in, you know, the hippie place around there. But, you know, he came up to my apartment. I offered him spaghetti and meatballs, which is all I had.
Franco, Chef Boyardee, right?
Chef Boyardee, yeah. And he said, well, I don't eat meat. You know, I'm a vegetarian. And that's only the second vegetarian in my life I'd ever met. The first one was our cleaning lady at the house, who was a Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I thought they could eat meat. Wow.
No, they're vegetarian. So, anyway, he was saying a lot of very esoteric things to me.
Okay.
And he was talking about how cosmic consciousness and things like that. And he asked me about whether I cleaned my house. My house was clean. I didn't understand what he was asking.
Was he bald with a little earring in his ear?
No.
Not Mr. Clean.
You did not just go there.
Oh,
my God.
Mr. Clean. So, yeah, that's quite a visual.
Yeah.
So, in any case, he said that he's a yogi. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what a yogi was. He said, I'm a yogi. And because I'm a yogi, I have time to spend all day cleaning the things in my house. And as he did that, he made a gesture as though he was using a cloth to clean like a candlestick or something.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't understand anything he was really saying. It was all just, it just was over my head.
Yeah.
What shall I say? But then I found out decades later that the term house, when you use it in a metaphysical sense, it means consciousness.
I see.
So he was talking about purifying your consciousness.
Well, he wasn't talking about like actually scrubbing and cleaning.
Got it.
It's like your head and your soul and your body.
And your house is your body.
Right.
Yeah, body and soul.
Right. Mm. Your emotions.
Yes.
And your, yes.
Oh, God, I need a
and
cleaning.
And your feelings and your mind.
Okay, Susan, tell us how you got into the TM and you were with the Maharishi for that whole instance. That was 22 years. How'd you start with that?
Yes. So, it was 1967. Mm-hmm. And a friend took me to the Transcendental Meditation Center. Actually, it was 1966.
Wow.
It was 1966, near the end of the year. And a friend took me to the Transcendental Meditation Center in Berkeley, California. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I walked in, I just felt this very serene atmosphere there.
You felt like you were home?
Yes, I did. And it just felt very uplifting to be in that place. And I saw a picture of the guru on the wall.
Maharishi?
And Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
Oh, my.
And
what a name.
It was like... Yeah, it was like he was radiating peace and love.
Just through his picture?
All the things that we hippies were talking about,
sure,
you know, peace and
sure.
love and all that.
Yeah.
So he was radiating that from his eyes. And immediately, as soon as I saw the picture, I knew that I was in the right place and that I was going to learn real meditation, which was what I was seeking at the time.
Okay.
So I signed up. But there was no teacher there at all. I had to wait 9 months before I could actually even learn meditation. So in the Summer of Love, August of 1967, the teacher came and I learned Transcendental Meditation from him. His name was Jerry Jarvis.
Okay.
So that's how I got into it. Yeah. Mm,
fabulous.
How'd you get with Mr. Maharishi, his second name? I can't pronounce.
No, you pronounced it correctly. Maharishi.
Mm-hmm. You just call him Ma.
Ma for sure.
Yeah. Ma, but that's a little in it. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, Maharishi, I first met him in September of 1967 when a group of us went down to L.A. to see him because he was giving a lecture down there.
Okay.
So we met him at the airport. And on the way there, I picked some wildflowers because you're supposed to give him flowers, you know.
Right.
So I picked some wildflowers from along the road there, and I was standing there in my ridiculous hippie attire, my junk store dress, my hippie beads, my frizzy hair, my unshaved legs and underarms.
Wow.
My granny glasses.
The horror.
Granny glasses.
I'm still stuck on her hairy legs and armpits.
The clunky sandals that I had made, the funky, clunky sandals with big nails keeping them together.
Oh, my.
And, you know, no nail polish, no toenail, nothing. And, of course, I'm standing there clutching my flowers, feeling extremely nervous and actually frightened. And I don't know why I felt that way, but that was just how
frightened.
I felt. And
wow.
I was feeling cold and clammy as waiting online.
Right.
While there's a corridor of people that he's walking through. And he's laughing and smiling and cooing at everyone.
He cooed.
And he has this amazing energy. It was like sunshine at dawn.
Wow,
as he's walking down the corridor of people. And he gets, and by the way, he's less than 5 feet tall.
I know,
he's a tiny man.
I'll tell you why he could be mad.
He's a little man.
Yes.
With a big spirit.
Right.
Little man, big spirit. Mm-hmm. So he's smiling and taking flowers from everyone and walking along. And then he gets to me and he stops. He didn't stop with other people. He stops.
Wow.
He looks me up. He looks me down. He looks me up. He looks me down. He scowls.
Well, you're like 5'9". He had a lot of looking to do. He's only five feet.
Look.
I'm surprised he didn't say, hey, what are you doing later?
That's really funny.
Oh, my God. But he scowled. What do you mean he scowled?
He scowled and then he grabbed the wildflowers from me.
Okay.
Unlike he did with other people. I just felt like he grabbed the wildflowers in disdain.
Hmm.
And, you know, that was my first introduction to him.
How'd you feel at that moment?
Terrible. I was so upset.
You're like mortified, right?
Yeah. Mortified. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to admit, I sort of looked like a Charles Manson family reject.
I saw those pictures. You kind of did. But I think they would have accepted you, really, Susan. Yeah.
They
Free
would have
love.
Accepted anybody for
really?
Fuck's sake.
That's hilarious.
Mm,
that's
God.
True.
So in any case, many years later, I reread Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that his first meeting with his guru, and he was a very famous guru, you know, he wrote the book Autobiography of a Yogi.
Yes.
And he founded the spiritual regeneration movement, SRM. Mm. So I realized that his first meeting with his guru was not exactly, you know, strains of violins and flowers and butterflies either.
Okay.
In fact, it turned sour very, very quickly.
Wow.
Why is that?
Yes. His guru told him to go back and live with his family in Calcutta, and Yogananda wouldn't have anything to do with that.
Wow.
He immediately rebelled and he said, I'm not doing that.
Right.
And his guru got very angry at him and said, next time I see you, it's going to take a lot for me to accept you as a disciple.
He's bossy.
Yeah. Well, he was very strict. He was a very strict disciple.
Sounds
very
like
strict guru.
Jeez, what?
Very strict guru.
Did he not bring enough berries or something?
And Maharishi was equally as strict.
I gotta
very,
say.
Very strict.
Wow, you guys. You got. Wait, I'll plug her book again, but this is some kind of book if you ever wanted to know. This is amazing, Susan. You wrote a great book. So go on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So after you met the Maharishi, how did you end up hooking up as a people?
Oh.
Not like that.
Well, right. Yeah, so the thing is that as soon as I learned meditation, I started having incredible experiences. I, you know, took to it like a duck takes to water. I mean, it was really for me.
Mm.
And I immediately wanted to volunteer at the center, TM Center. Mm-hmm. I wanted to become a teacher. I started applying to go to teacher training courses.
Okay.
And they kept rejecting me when I kept applying for the teacher training courses because they kept telling me, you're too young, you're too young, you're too young.
How
every
old
time
were
I
you?
Would apply. Well, I learned TM at age 19.
Okay.
And I immediately started to apply to go to India to the teacher training courses, but they said you had to be at least 24 and
oh my
graduated
goodness.
College.
Oh, for
and
crying
so,
out loud. Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't accept me. And that was true for Prudence Farrow also, Mia Farrow's sister. Same thing happened to her. She learned TM and before me, actually. She learned in 1965 and she kept applying too, but they kept rejecting and rejecting, rejecting her. Hmm. Finally, they let her go, or Maharishi personally let her go because her sister was going, Prudence.
Right.
Prudence's sister, Mia Farrow.
Right.
Mia Farrow went to India the same time the Beatles did.
Right.
So do you think that was a coincidence? Accepted. No.
No, no. He actually said she could go because her sister was going.
I mean, it was. So he was starstruck.
He met with her. He met with her, Prudence, and he met with Mia when he was in Boston. And he gave permission for Prudence to go, even though she was young. But finally, in 1970, there was a course starting in January, and Maharishi allowed the younger kids to go. So I went there, and there were a lot of kids my age that were there at that time.
Hmm. Wow.
So you went to India. Oh, you
I did.
In the airport, I found this interesting. A man came up to you and said, what? Stranger out of the blue. He said to you.
That was when I was at the Guggenheim Museum.
Oh, yes.
In New York City. Before I left for India,
mm-hmm.
a stranger came to me, came up to me and asked if I'd like to walk around the museum with him. I said, sure, you know, because we were talking about the artists and the museum and so on. And some of my favorite artists were there. And so we walked around and then he asked if I'd like to have tea. So we had tea. The end of that, end of our walk. And as we're having tea, all of a sudden he said to me, I was sent to you to tell you something.
Whoa.
So I was like, what?
What?
Stranger. He said, I was sent to you to tell you not to go to India and not to study with this teacher that you're going to be studying with because he's not what he appears to be.
Wow.
Whoa.
And I was like, I was just in shock.
Sure.
Absolutely in shock. And then And then he said, you're not the only person I have warned about this. I was sent to other people too. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? This man must be out of his mind.
Right.
So he.
But how did he know? I mean, that's so bizarre.
That's
were you
I'd like to know.
Yeah.
You didn't tell him why you were having tea?
I told him I was going to India, but I did not tell him about Maharishi specifically. I didn't tell him about, you know.
Well, he knew. Just knew something.
Wow. He knew.
Wow.
And so that was a very strange encounter that I had at the Guggenheim Museum the day before I left
that
India.
I was really like, wow.
I figured that he must be insane and I'm going to India. So I did. Okay. I went to India.
All right. Wow. Did you ever see this man again?
No.
Wow.
I never saw the other man either, the one who was in front of my apartment.
In khakis, loafers, and a nicely pressed shirt. Mr. Clean.
Right.
Mr. Clean Yogi.
Mr. Clean Yogi.
But you know what's interesting about that? And what I find amazing is that there are people that come into your life to give you a message. They don't even know why.
Absolutely.
But I believe that there are people that think, oh, well, I need to say this to this person.
Exactly.
And you can
it
either,
happens.
Yeah, you can take it or you can leave it. But it's certainly something to consider because you go, wow, why did they say that to me? Why is it suggested? Is it God's plan? Is there a universal thing? But why did this person say this at this particular time?
That's bizarre to me.
Exactly where you are and what you're doing. And without even knowing, him knowing that what you're doing is pretty, pretty. That's like an angel. I mean, that's weird. You know, it's wild.
An angel who likes art.
It isn't just like an angel, Donnie. Yeah. It is an angel.
Yeah, it's an angel who likes blondes.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry.
That's it.
That's tall, blondes.
5'9" blondes. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. No, that's it. It's amazing that that happened. Kind of ironic. And then you never see them again. And it's like, wow, that was a message. You know, and that's
it was.
You know. Yeah. Not that you listened because you went anyway, but the point of it was
yes,
is that there was something that could have been. It could have been a dark angel. You never know. It could have been anything.
Well, Susan. Okay, so tell us about landing in India and how that all began and going to see Maharishi.
Well, you know, I was 21 years old when I arrived in India, and it was. Different, you know, India is an unusual place.
Yeah.
And so I went on a harrowing taxi ride from from Delhi to the ashram.
Was it a horse taxi?
It was what they called an ambassador at the time, ambassador taxi cabs they had in India at the time. Wow. There's a picture of one in the book, actually. I have 100 pictures in that book.
You have great pictures. Yeah, I love
them. There's a picture of the ambassador taxi in there, Maharishi sitting in the taxi. Anyway, so it was quite something with the taxi driver leaning on the horn the entire time and dodging bullock carts and rickshaw,
and cows, right?
And cows sitting in the middle of the road.
Because they're sacred.
Because they're sacred. So it was something. And I arrived at the ashram. The ashram was in the jungle. And it was continually under construction. And Maharishi, the mad contractor, was trying to engineer little streams that would flow through the ashram, but he was trying to engineer them so that they would flow upstream rather than downstream, and that doesn't quite work.
Jeez, I guess he wasn't like an architect or an engineer mind, you know.
Too good at it, but he was
left brain, right brain, right.
And driving all the workers crazy, telling them to move a brick this place and then move it back over here and then to put this concrete over there. And, you know, he was very hands-on. He was a micromanager, let's put it that way.
So when
driving everyone nuts.
When did you
That was Maharishi.
There's Mr. Maharishi. And you became part of his inner circle. You worked for him for 6 years, correct?
I certainly did.
And
when I was in India, I spent 6 months there, actually. The course is only 3 months, but I stayed another 3 months, and there was only a handful of people that stayed afterwards. So I got to know him very well, and, you know, I spent a lot of private time and semi-private time with him. And then I joined his staff, like you said.
Wow.
I joined his international staff the following year.
Wow.
You know, he seemed to be very, very hard on you, Susan. And I know it's about ego. I know that's putting it lightly. You're right.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. That's an understatement. That he's hard on me. Yeah.
To, you know, and they say, oh, you're lucky because he does that because he loves you. And it's about your ego. And you know what? And I'm reading about some of the things he said to you. And this is why Maharishi said, because it's me. I don't follow someone. I don't, you know, I'm not a follower of religion. I am spiritual. I don't believe these guru guys. I don't believe in anything. More power to anyone who does and joins. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, we all have different paths. We all have different lives. But when he was so mean to you, if he said half the things, I'm thinking, I'm saying, listen here, shorty. You know,
But the things that he said to you, were they from an egotistical place, or were they from a place of him wanting you to grow?
You know, Donnie, that is a really great question, and I can't really tell you the answer.
Okay.
I have my own belief about it, mm-hmm. but what this book does is it asks a lot of questions, but it doesn't give the reader the answers. Mm-hmm. You have to actually come to your own conclusions. It just reports what happened. And the tradition in India, traditionally in India, when you sign up to be a disciple of a guru, which very few people did with Maharishi, by the way.
There were
6 million people who learned transcendental meditation through Maharishi's organization. But very few of them were close to Maharishi, who worked with him on staff. Very, very small number of people were there around him at the time that I was working directly with him.
Wow.
So I had that rare experience of being in his inner circle and being around him closely.
And him picking on you.
But But traditionally in India, when you sign up to be a disciple of a guru and to live in their ashram, mm-hmm. which is what I did, mm-hmm. There's an unspoken contract that you're there to attain spiritual awakening and spiritual enlightenment.
Right.
And spiritual enlightenment is defined, the definition of it is egoless.
Right.
It's an egoless state,
mm-hmm.
which means your ego has to go somewhere.
Right.
So Maharishi always used to say to us close disciples that he was a carpenter and we were pieces of wood.
Okay.
If you're a piece of wood and the carpenter is carving you up, mm-hmm. and carving you up and carving you up to make you into something beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, a carpenter is going to make a piece of wood into some beautiful artistic thing.
Yes, I believe carpenters are artists.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Men who build or women who build. They're artists.
Yeah, so the carpenter is carving you up. If you're a piece of wood, it's not really very comfortable to be carved up. It's not a whole lot of fun to be carved.
Well, he did have his favorites.
And to have to step out of your ego box and
how could you have done it,
Susan? Express your true self.
I feel that he was very much a male chauvinist, a misogynist perhaps. Because of the some things you've written, and one of them was, you know, you're sitting in a room, you have your super flowing, you're not just have your period, it's your first day, and you're super flowing, and anyone who's a woman knows the first day, cramp, super flow, whatever,
right.
And you were wearing your pad, and you're thinking, oh my God, I hope it doesn't, whatever, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, while you're thinking that, he goes, what smells in here?
Oh, no.
And he kept sniffing. And you couldn't smell anything, and nobody else could smell anything.
Oh, my God.
That was so rude. How could he have smelled you? You said everything was A-OK when you got up. What is he?
He's a freaking guru. He knows.
Oh, please. He has divine smelling.
Yeah, sure. His senses are acute.
Didn't he make you guys, the women, you didn't work for the first 3 days of your period?
Exactly. We had to, quote unquote, be resting. The resting program was where we would not leave our rooms for the first 3 days of our period.
Like you were wicked and evil. What was that about, Susan? You know?
We would have to stay in our rooms and just eat fruit and not come out of our rooms and just rest during the first 3 days of our period. That was the tradition in India, apparently. Wow.
But didn't you believe
he made us do that?
Wow.
That was a bit misogynistic, if you ask me.
I hear you.
Shorty.
And at the time, I was not thinking about misogyny.
Of course not. You're thinking he is like a godlike creation.
Yes,
and
exactly.
He giggled. And he's talking about ego, but he did some really mean things. And he would say, you have to go home, you have to do this, and then you can't do that. And you guys got paid dookie squash. No offense. You
did. We didn't get paid.
What'd you make, $2 a day?
Yeah, you're...
It was less than that. It was $25 a month was our stipend.
For how'd you eat? How did you survive that?
No. We were staying in luxury hotels and eating the food that was provided.
Okay.
But $25 barely paid for the sanitary napkins, I have to admit it. It's the truth.
No wonder he smelled you.
Definitely didn't pay for, you know, makeup. I didn't wear any, you know.
Okay, Susan. So
my head is down right now. I can't even dare.
What is guys? Guys with menstruation have a lot of problems with that. It's so odd.
That was one of the funniest stories in the book, actually.
I laughed out loud.
You didn't tell the rest of the story, which got even funnier. At the end of our stay at that same place, after he called me out about the smell, at the end of that time, we were all put into Mercedes Benzes to drive to our next location. Only he didn't put me in a luxury Mercedes Benz. Instead, he put me in the back of a Fiat with a German couple.
A Fiat isn't bad.
Yeah. It's not too bad, except it was a broken down, rusty one.
Oh.
So the couple had a dog, and the dog was sitting in the back with me.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Well,
and the
goes.
Dog,
here it goes.
Unfortunately, the dog was a bitch, and the bitch was in heat, and the bitch was bleeding all over me.
My God.
And every time as we were driving, I'd see Maharishi in the other car, and he'd look back at me. And every time he would see me in the back of the car sitting with the bitch in heat, he would laugh uproariously.
Oh, Lord.
That was mean.
Anyway, that was one of the stories in the book. Wow. There's a few funny stories
there. I mean, there really were.
There's a lot of funny stories, actually.
I have questions. What were the Beatles like?
Okay, now, I know the whole story about the Beatles, but as I explained, I was not there on their course because I applied for that course, but they didn't accept me.
I see.
Prudence was there, but I wasn't. But yes, I know everything about what happened with the Beatles in India, so I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have about it because I know the whole story, and my book is probably... Well, it's one out of two books that tells the whole story. Well, let's put it that way.
I'm gonna come from the musical side of things. I know that they were trying to search deeper into finding, like especially George, finding the music and finding the energy of the sound that was that would be created from that kind of meditation and that kind of enlightenment. And George seriously just brought it. He changed it, made it a bit more pop, made it a bit more rhythmically acceptable in America. Do you think that changed the Beatles in the sense of, was that the beginning of the end for them?
Okay. You dropped out there for a minute.
Sorry.
But I think you asked, you did ask it was the beginning of the end for them, but I wasn't sure how that related to you. You were talking about George.
Right. And he kind of...
Indian spirituality into the mainstream through his music.
Right. Yes. Yes. That wasn't really the question. The question really was if you feel that changed the dynamic of the Beatles. After that, even though they got enlightened, it seemed that they broke up pretty soon after that.
The interesting thing is that Maharishi warned the Beatles when they were in India that if they didn't continue their meditation practice, their band would break up.
Wow. Wow.
Wow. So he actually predicted it.
Wow.
But okay. They were already on the outs, by the way. When they got to India, it wasn't like everything was hunky-dory and they were all copacetic with each other.
Mm-hmm.
There was much brewing in the band before they got to
poor
India.
Poor Cynthia. I read that. Oh, my God, the story about poor Cynthia, the way she was treated by John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really sad. 2 weeks after they arrived in India, John actually moved out of the room that he and Cynthia were staying in. He moved into his own room. He ignored Cynthia the rest of the time. And the entire time he was there, he was reveling in postcards and letters from Yoko Ono, unbeknownst to Cynthia. And Cynthia didn't understand why he was ignoring her. And she had hoped before they came to India that it was going to be a second honeymoon for them.
Poor
but
kid.
It turned out to be nothing like that. It turned out to be
the kibosh.
Just a horrible experience for her.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yeah, it was Patty Boyd, all of them. Mia Farrow left pretty quickly, didn't she?
Yeah,
she said something that the Maharishi had made a pass at her or something.
Okay, so the thing about Mia is, yes, she left, but then she came back. She actually left twice and came back.
Okay.
And then stayed until March 7th. She was the one that arrived with Maharishi. She and Prudence, her sister, they flew to India with Maharishi, and they arrived in late January. So they were the first celebrities to arrive for that course, and they didn't know the Beatles were going to be there, but but Mia thought the Beatles were going to be there, and that's one reason why she went on the course. And she learned Transcendental Meditation on her way to India.
Wow.
Actually, when she got in India and they were in Mumbai, that's where she learned TM from Maharishi. So she was a completely new meditator, whereas her sister had been doing it for 3 years already.
Right.
So her sister was really serious about becoming a TM teacher, and that's why she went on the course. But Mia just went there. Well, we don't know what her motive was for going, but she went there maybe because the Beatles were going to be there, maybe because she had some interest in meditation. But after she got there, she likened the ashram to a graveyard and said that she was bored out of her skull.
Wow.
So she would spend most of her time on the Ganges reading a book or going out shopping and so on.
Well, wasn't that around the time that she was with Frank Sinatra?
She had just split up with Frank
Sinatra.
Oh,
that's probably why she went to that's why she was like, all right, I got to meditate.
Could be, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So that was what happened with her. And then on her birthday, well, first of all, she was bored out of her mind, so she said she wanted to leave. So so Maharishi and another woman there who was taking care of Mia, actually she had been assigned by Maharishi to look after Mia.
She got special treatment, all the celebs.
Nancy Jackson took care of her. And when Mia expressed that she was bored and she wanted to leave, Maharishi talked her into going on a little animal safari and then coming back in time for her birthday.
To kill animals?
So, particular safari was just to look at animals. It wasn't to kill animals. The killing animals comes later in the story.
Ah.
That had something to do with the song Bungalow Bill. And that had nothing to do with Mia, by the way.
Okay.
So Mia and Nancy went off on a little safari, and then she came back in time for her birthday. Well, at her birthday, Maharishi once again was showering his attention on her, giving her special treatment, putting her up on stage, putting a silver crown on her head. And Mia felt very uncomfortable about all this special attention. And then at the end of that night, she was in a private kind of party with a few people, and she expressed to them that she's leaving tomorrow and that Maharishi is not holy, and that he made a pass at her before dinner, and that he had taken her down to his cave underneath his house.
His man cave? That's right.
His man cave.
And he came onto her house.
It was a basement. Mm-hmm. And apparently he tried to hug her, and he stroked her hair. So she reported to these people at the party, you know, when they were aghast, when she said that he had made a pass at her, they didn't believe her and they were aghast. And she said, well, he stroked my hair. And they said, well, you know, that isn't exactly a pass.
Could have stroked more than that. But,
but she said, hey, I know a pass from a puja, quote unquote.
Okay.
That's what she said. So she left again and went to hang out with her brother, John Farrell, who is also a well-known in the film industry. Anyway, so she went to see him. He was in Goa hanging out with the hippies there doing drugs. So she went out to hang out with him. But then when she found – she came back. She did come back when she found out that the Beatles were going to come to India. So she – not only did she come back, but she finagled her way into riding in John and – Cynthia's car to arrive back in India, and she she finagled herself into their car to get back to the ashram and left her sister behind in another taxi cab.
What a sweetheart,
and
right?
To
Mia's,
her.
Mia's just a sweet, meek little angel face.
Yeah, the wife of Frank Sinatra, totally meek. Yeah.
Right. But she is. She talks like this.
Here's the thing.
Right.
I hear Mia is not. I have a friend of mine that knows her and said to me that that's all an act. She really talks like a truck driver.
Like swears like a truck driver.
She's a tough broad.
She did swear like a truck driver that night when she was talking about Maharishi and how he made a pass at her. I just didn't give you the exact quote on the air, but you can read it in the book.
Well, okay. Was it like, I want to help you with your spirituality, but I need you to help me with my holy of the holies? I don't know. I'm wondering why if he made a pass or what, he stroked her hair, but... I mean, I don't know.
Later in her memoir, she said that he put his arms around her. She felt these hairy arms going around her.
Oh, jeez.
She also, when she got back to America from India, soon after she got back, she spoke with Ned Wynn, who's a friend of mine. He was the son of Keenan Wynn and the grandson of Edwin. Obviously, you know these people. You're TCM people.
I know
them. You know who Edwin is. You know who Keenan Wynn is. So Ned told me personally that Maharishi definitely made a pass at her, that he not only did he put his arms around her, he invited her to lie down with him. So that is what she reported to Ned. But later in her memoir, when she described the hairy arms and everything, she kind of backpedaled on it. And she said that at the state of consciousness she was in at that time, if Jesus Christ had put his arms around her to hug her, she would have accused him of making a pass at her. So she did.
Was she on drugs?
Backpedal.
Was she on drugs?
No.
Yeah, but I'm sure, you know what, I think I have heard... I don't know. Maybe I'm just – I imagine that, you know, after being with Frank Sinatra, she was probably a little like, stay away from me right now, you know.
No, I doubt that. She just didn't want the Maharishi's hairy arms around her. She would have wanted someone else's hairy arms, but perhaps not the Maharishi. Where's Susan? She left.
We lost her phone.
Oh, fuck.
What? Is your battery dead?
No. Nope, I charged it. I supercharged.
Let the supercharge go on.
Here she is. What happened?
We lost you.
I don't know. The call dropped.
All right.
Anyway, I was about to say, yeah, she wanted Donovan's arms around her. That's who she
was. Oh, she was flirting with him, too.
Yes, at the ashram.
Wow.
And also, once she got back, once she rode back in victory with John and Cynthia, she stayed there, and she only had positive things to say, and she stayed there until March 7th.
Wow.
She stayed quite a bit of time after that.
They also were not supposed to be doing any drugs, but they were, right? The Beatles?
Well,
they
John
smuggled
was.
Them in, John.
We know that John did. I don't know about anyone else. But John did, and also Alexis and his girlfriend did. Alexis Martis was with the Beatles. He arrived late in March, but he was part of their party.
I see.
And he said the Maharishi made a pass at him.
No, he didn't say that Maharishi made a pass at him. He said Maharishi made a pass at his girlfriend.
Oh,
Rosalind.
At his girlfriend, because I was like, yeeks,
his girlfriend
Maharishi.
Rosalind. No, I've never heard any of stories of Maharishi making a pass at any men, but I know several women that he not only made passes at, he had sex with.
Wow.
Which to me is so hypocritical because you guys couldn't have sex. Right?
Well, he advised his international staff and his TM teachers to be celibate. That is correct.
Well, he's getting it.
unless he calls upon you to take care of it. You know?
That's, I don't know. See, all that stuff gets to me because they're just such hypocrites. His cruelty, your need, because you, like you said, somebody said to you that you were like, they were talked behind your back because you were so needy and needed to be seen by him.
Exactly.
And approval. And that, like, you were running after him to get in a car or something.
Whatever, yeah. Yeah, I was very devotional towards him. Let's put it that way. He never made a pass at me, by the way. I know that. I know that question's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just say no. He never made a pass.
Can you see? I'm trying.
I wasn't his type.
Well, you're 5'9" and slim.
Not only wasn't I his type, he knew that if he ever did, that would be it. I would be gone so fast.
Right.
That he would, you know, it was like a speeding bullet. He would.
Do you really think so? Because you were so
absolutely.
You were so mesmerized by him, Susan.
Oh, there's no way. I would have been so freaked. I would have been absolutely. I would have just run so fast.
But the things he would say to you, like if you brought, oh, about the turquoise, you know, bracelets and everything. He was like made this huge fuss about a turquoise something that someone gave him.
The coral bracelet that I gave to him, yeah.
Yeah, well, everybody's like, give him turquoise now, turquoise. And you had this coral bracelet, which was, what, like tied with a string. And he took it and he like looked at you like you or didn't look at you and kind of like threw it away or something.
What did he do? What happened?
Okay, this was in Fuggifonte, Italy, one of the places where we were staying, and Maharishi was teaching teacher training courses. And Maharishi said, one woman came up to Maharishi and gave him a necklace of coral. They sold a lot of coral around that area.
Okay.
And so she gave him a coral necklace, and she said, will you bless this for me? And so he took it in his hands, and he looked at it, and he played with it, and he gave it back to her. And then he was in the lecture hall at the time on stage. So he said, all the women should wear coral. Hmm. So all of a sudden, everybody bought coral and gave the coral to him to bless.
Bossy, bossy, bossy.
So I, so
marketing,
I bought
marketing.
What I bought the only thing. No, he wasn't selling the coral, mm-hmm. but I bought the only thing that I could afford, which was this little bracelet made of coral. But I noticed that with all the people who gave him the coral bracelets and coral necklaces, that he would take them and he would put them on his arms while he was lecturing, and then at the end of the lecture he would give them back to people.
Okay.
So what I did with my little bracelet, which was, you know, my pathetic little bracelet, was that I, because I was living on $25 stipends
yeah.
a month, was that I tied a string on it so it would be big enough to go over his arm.
Okay.
And so when I gave it to him, he looked at it. He picked it up by the gold clasp. He didn't even touch the coral.
Okay.
And then he gave it back to me and put it in my hand. With a look of disgust and disdain.
That was my
little coral incident.
Yeah, but that was so horrible. That because again, he is that is the antithesis of what a holy man is supposed to be. If you think about it, Jesus, would Jesus do something like that? This guy.
We don't know what Jesus would do, do we? The theme of my book is one of the main themes of my book. Is that we don't know how a quote-unquote holy person acts, and that we have a lot of expectations about how a holy,
sure.
quote unquote person acts.
Right.
And we don't know how a spiritual master makes a disciple into someone who is quote unquote egoless.
But he was not egoless. How do we know that? When the Beatles left and then when they wanted to return.
Okay, so it was 1969.
Okay.
And Maharishi was sitting in his little meeting room in his little bungalow in Rishikesh. Mm-hmm. And there were a handful of people there. And all of a sudden, the secretary came in and said, Maharishi, there's an important telegram for you. And he said, what it is? And the secretary said, it's from John Lennon. And Maharishi said, who? The secretary said, John Lennon. Maharishi said, who? Uh-oh. The secretary said, John Lennon of the Beatles, who is here with you. And Maharishi looked at the secretary and he said, I do not know a John Lennon.
Tell how they left, John allegedly, and I don't know, Donovan. I don't know who left with John, but tell what John did when he left.
Okay.
Which would have what John made did, him PO'd.
Right. What John and George did when they left the ashram was John wrote a song called Maharishi. Mm. And it had a lot of expletives in it. Once again, I'm not going to say what those expletives were, but there were expletives in that song that were very harsh against Maharishi. And he said, you know, he said, you made a fool of everyone. What have you done? He said, one sunny day, the world was waiting for a lover. She came along and turned on everyone, the greatest of them all. Right. The world was waiting just for you. And he went on and on. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this song, and it was with a lot of expletives about Maharishi. Mm-hmm. And then George said to him, John, you can't you can't write that. You can't sing that. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So John changed Maharishi to Sexy Sadie.
Wow. Mm. What a cool story. But when they left, Maharishi was setting up some sort of movie thing with Apple, who was doing another movie right. with that. But yet there was some competing force. And I don't know that the Beatles knew about any of this, did they?
No. So what happened was when they were in India, Ringo and Paul had already left. Ringo had to leave early because he missed his kids at home. His wife hated the bugs of the ashram.
Can't blame him.
And frankly, Ringo couldn't handle the food. He had brought an entire suitcase of Heinz beans, but apparently he'd eaten all the beans already. Oh, yeah. So he didn't have anything to eat. So, yeah, he'd had childhood peritonitis, so he had a problem with the food. Mm-hmm. And then Paul had to leave early because the woman he came with, which was Jane Asher, she had to get back to London because of a theatrical commitment. So Paul left after a month. So there were only two Beatles left, which was John and George. Mm-hmm. And they were in discussions about a film. They wanted Apple Corps was going to do a film, and Neil Aspinall of Apple Corps and Dennis O'Dell, who had made the Hard Day's Night movie,
right,
and had made also the Magical Mystery Tour. So they arrived in India and negotiated a contract with Maharishi. And then Neil went back to London, and the Beatles sent him a cable and said, bring a film crew back. Mm. Meanwhile, behind their back, unbeknownst to them, Maharishi had made the same promise as someone else. It was Four Star Productions in Los Angeles, and Maharishi's lieutenant, the head of his organization in America, Charlie Lutz, negotiated a contract with Four Star Productions, and he came to India with a signed contract that gave exclusive rights to film Maharishi for the next 5 years.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my Lord.
The four-star film crew arrived in Rishikesh.
Oh, my God.
And John Lennon was one morning bedheaded, bleary-eyed, opens the door to his bungalow, standing at the threshold of his bungalow. Mm-hmm. There's a cameraman and a director there and the director yells, "Action!"
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Okay.
What did John do?
George and John and George were so pissed off. And they realized, well, Maharishi's been using us all along for publicity. That's what they concluded, you know, and they were very angry about it. And they would not leave their bungalow. They refused to leave their bungalow. They stayed inside. They wouldn't appear for the film crew. They didn't go to the lecture hall where the lights and the cameras were set up.
Mm.
So that's how they reacted to that.
Wow.
And then they left. But didn't they shun the Maharishi when they left? He said, "Why are you leaving?" And they looked right past him.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes, as they were leaving.
So,
and they had already had a discussion with him, though, before they left. They had talked to him in the bungalow.
But he said, "Why are you leaving? Why are you leaving?" And they ignored him and they left. And the Maharishi, you know, he felt slighted. He's no just God guy. He was a human being who felt
humiliated.
Sure.
At what they did, hence his "Who's John Lennon? I don't know him. I don't know him."
Mm.
But all I have to say, you were so devoted, and you took, I think, way too much, Susan. Way too much.
Well, you know what? Let me. You know what? On the other side of that, what did you walk away with?
Oh my gosh!
So much.
I walked away with so much self empowerment, so much, not only skills in meditation, not only spiritual awakening and spiritual development,
mm-hmm.
but learning so many practical skills in daily life because I worked in so many areas.
I lost her again.
Okay. We'll finish it up with that.
Okay, cutie.
Two. I don't know why it's doing that. I guess the Wi-Fi's a little funked up.
Or her connection. Or maybe she hit it with her chin, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hello. I love you. Won't you tell me your name?
Okay.
Yes, I'm back.
Yay.
Well, we've never had this. This is so weird.
That's very strange. Yeah, I have 5 bars on my phone.
Oh, my God.
Here.
That is so... We have never had a cutoff phone like that.
That's okay. We'll edit it and it'll be fine.
I'm just talking it to Maharishi because I called him a shrimp.
Yeah. Mushroom.
He probably is. He's probably fooling around with us even now.
Exactly. So, all right. So now you were saying... I'm sorry.
I was talking about everything that I had walked away with.
Yes.
And how amazing it was. And I think I finished that sentence. But did I? Did you get the part about that I was in charge of a huge hotel in Interlaken and I'm the hotel manager?
Missed it. So go ahead. Tell us about that. So,
let me just go ahead and say all the things again that I learned.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yep.
Not only did I walk away with amazing experiences of meditation and spiritual development and awesome spiritual experiences and really evolution in consciousness, in my opinion, but also I learned very practical skills because I worked in so many areas of Maharishi's staff, including accounting, including art. I did all these paintings for Maharishi and illustrations.
He complained.
And including design. I did a tremendous amount of design and learned all about how to create books.
And clothes.
Yes, I did that also.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, I was also the manager of this huge, huge luxury hotel in Interlaken, very famous hotel called the Victoria Jungfrau in Interlaken. Anyone who's ever been to that town knows that
Jungfrau.
Amazing, huge hotel.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, I learned so much, and I gained so much self-empowerment from having been on his staff and having gone through that whole experience. I would say
amazing.
That everything was completely positive for me.
Amazing. That's all that matters. As long as, I know Maharishi puts you through some trials and tribulations and all that sense because if, you know, he was tough on you, but as long as the end result, you came out better for it, then that's beautiful.
Absolutely,
That's beautiful.
And he was very tough on her because he knew how dependent and how much he meant
to her,
to Susan.
Right, sure.
Because he knew that.
Right.
And he told you, go home, make money, come back.
He said, "You're too dependent on me.
Uh-huh.
I won't always be here." Mm-hmm. So you have to go.
When did Maharishi die? When did he go?
So Maharishi died in 2008 at age 90.
Wow.
Amazing.
Was he still like, was he feeble or was he still, you know, able to do his stuff?
Well, for the last several years of his life, he could not walk. He was in a wheelchair. And a lot of people don't know that, but I know. I'm an insider.
Did you get to see him? Did you get to say goodbye to him?
I did not see him after 1985, and he died in 2008.
Wow.
Wow. Was that because you came into the Divine, that other group that you do, the Divine, what is it called?
Divine Revelation. It's because I began to teach another form of meditation that was not transcendental meditation.
Okay.
And because of that, I left the TM organization. That's the reason I didn't see him again.
Oh, I see.
They kicked you out, basically.
Also, he was in Holland. You know, he lived in Holland.
Oh, okay.
He didn't come back to the United States after 1985. I saw him the last time he was in the United States.
Wow. By the way, speaking of Holland, you know that I hear Holland is like the place to live.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've heard, like, nothing great, but great things about Holland. Isn't that funny? Like, because they allow dogs to go into, like, restaurants and stuff.
You know, that's a good reason.
Donnie loves his buddy.
I love my dog.
That's a good reason to move.
I'm like, you know what? I'll go there. Yeah, they will not, they don't slaughter animals in any shape or form.
Yeah.
So I love that. Anyway, it's been such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. I wish we had another hour.
I know, but what I need to ask you before we go, I want you to tell us what you're up to now. You've written 14 books. You're an award-winning author. You go around making speeches. Do you teach still as well?
I do, yes. I still teach, you know.
Good.
And I speak at conferences, and I teach, and I also put together these seminars at sea, these conferences at sea, and get a lot of wonderful, famous authors together. Okay. And we spend a week on the ocean and teach and have a great time.
That's
something I do too, which is divinetravels.com.
Oh,
is
fabulous.
My website for that.
Can they find that on your main website, or should I do
Yes, my website is drsusan.org, drsusan.org, and then the travel, if you want to come on one of my spiritual tours to Machu Picchu, Peru, or a cruise that we do, holistic cruises, that's divinetravels.com.
Divinetravels.com. You know, I want to come. I want to cruise to the, like, let's go to Peru.
Well, last time we had a naked cruise.
That's true. Yes, yeah, we had a guest who has a naked cruise. But you know what? Here's the thing.
You were on the nude cruise?
Not us.
I just came up with a new song. It's going to be called "I Want to Go to Peru with You."
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
Okay, Susan. You know, we've gone over an hour, and this is one of our longest ones, but you are fantastic. I want to tell everybody, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. And it is a great book. I read it. I laughed. I got mad. I did a lot of stuff. Yeah. You know,
most people get mad and they laugh.
Yeah.
Some people cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mostly laughed and got angry for you.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much again. Where are you speaking next?
Well, let's see. I'm speaking next in upstate New York at SUNY, where there's a conference coming up in June.
Cool.
And if you want to find out more about it, just go to my website, drsusan.org. Go to my author page, look at the itinerary.
Okay.
You can find out all the details of everywhere I'm speaking and everywhere, and even all my interviews. Even this interview is listed up there.
Perfect. Love it.
Yeah.
I will link you up when I post this so people will know where to go. And Susan, I loved your book. Maybe you'll come on my True Stories from Tinseltown and we'll talk. We'll talk TCM. Okay.
All right, Susan, thank you so much for being with us. And it's In Your Face with Donnie and Grace. Thank you, Susan.
.com. Also, follow us on iTunes and our Facebook page.
Yes.
Please.
I'll show you pictures of Donnie being late.
Don't do it.
And the groovy stuff we have going around for Susan, which is making me nauseous right now.
All right, Susan, you be well, darling.
Thank you very much, Susan. You're wonderful.
Bye now.
Bye.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you. We did too. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, we had Susan.
Yes. Shrumsky. What I'm trying to tell you is that when you, because your mic was really loud.
We're still on. We didn't say goodbye to our people.
I thought we just did.
No. Sorry. Okay, we said goodbye to our guests, but we didn't say goodbye to our people.
Oh, okay. We're going to say goodbye to our people. Here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Well, listen, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us. Grace, you are fabulous.
Donnie, so art thou.
Thank you. And it's In Your Face with Donnie and Grace.
.com/news. In Your Face with Donnie and Grace. Podbean.com, Facebook.com/ In Your Face with Donnie and Grace. Follow us on our page. And we are on iTunes. And if you don't have an iPhone, you can download the Podbean app.
Fabulous.
And you can get us on that as well. So please follow us. And thank you so much, guys. We love yous.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.